easy to see. They're everywhere. They're in all different kinds of habitats and ecosystems. And you can see them in the middle of a large city like New York City, or you can see them up on the high alpine slopes out in the middle of the ocean, everywhere in between. Those birds are just really an important part of nature, and they're really easy to see and get to know. You can feed birds in your backyard, et cetera.
So they're just little billboards, basically.
They are. They're just a great way for us to feel like we're in touch with nature, be a part of nature, and also understand how nature is functioning and what kind of issues and problems we need to address.
And Ben Diebel, you're a sage-grouse consultant, right?
Yes, that's right. I started working on sage-grouse conservation about 20 years ago because it was pretty obvious even then that the bird was going to face some long-term conservation challenges. And in fact, that's come to be the case. The bird's been proposed for addition to the endangered species list, and we're continuing to lose it. We're about to lose it in states like North and South Dakota, Canada, etc.
Lose it to industrial activity or what?
Habitat loss and range contraction in general. There's been a lot of energy development in the bird's habitat. There's also been a lot of habitat loss over many decades to agricultural uses like growing wheat and corn and other things. And now climate change is just one of the latest factors we're needing to factor in.
And Steve Hoffman of Montana Audubon, what, if any, impacts is climate change right now having on the birds that Montana Audubon typically tracks?
Well, first of all, let me say that birds have a lot of stresses on them right now and have for a while, and climate change is one more. And, yeah, there's a lot we don't know about the impacts of climate change on birds, but there's some research coming out in recent years that tells us there's some warning signs that birds are going to be adversely impacted greatly, and we're starting to see that now. First of all, to preface what I'm going to say about climate change, one-third of all birds in the state of Montana are declining, and about one-quarter of all birds in the state are on a state species of concern list. There's 427 species known in the state of Montana, and one-third are declining. One-quarter of them are on the state list.
And if I can interrupt you, they're declining to what?
The rates of decline are vary with the species, but some common species have declined as much as 80% over the last 40 years.
And the reason being?
Well, we think much of it is due to habitat changes, habitat loss, habitat fragmentation.
So then what sort of potential impacts could we see on these birds as the climate continues to change?
Well, you could take wetland birds, and wetland birds are obviously going to be one of the greatest groups of birds being impacted because as it gets hotter and drier, the amount of wetland habitat is going to decline, the stream flows will be reduced, and species that are dependent on those wetland habitats are going to be in trouble. Another issue that I wanted to mention is, of course, the impact of climate on migratory birds that move into Montana in the summertime. And there was a recent study done in Colorado on the broad-tailed hummingbird over a 40-year period. And, of course, hummingbirds depend heavily on nectar for their survival. And, of course, when flowers bloom will impact their food resource. What this study determined was that one of their primary flowers, the glacier lily, which produces a lot of nectar, and it's been blooming on an average of 4.5 days earlier per decade, and so that's 18 days earlier over the past 40 years. The broad-tailed hummingbirds have been arriving a little bit earlier, an average of about 1.5 days per decade, or about 6 days over the last 40 years. So that's a differential of about 12 days. So already we're seeing a disconnect between when the birds are arriving and when their food resources are most available. And, of course, that's going to very likely affect their breeding success. And, of course, that's just one species of bird, but we're seeing similar patterns with other bird species as well. In terms of insectivorous birds are arriving more or less as they always have, but yet the insect abundance is moving earlier and earlier into the early part of the summer or late spring. And so there's a disconnect there for when they need to have their insect abundance to feed young and raise young each year. So that's one concern. And so one of the things that Audubon and specifically is doing in terms of trying to respond to the issue of hummingbirds is they've created a new citizen science project called Hummingbirds at Home. You can find that on the website, hummingbirdsathome.org. And it's a chance for anybody to watch hummingbirds and watch the flowers and see where hummingbirds are feeding, what they're feeding on, and when they're seeing them, and whether there's a change in the flowering time, the phenology of flowering plants on this patch of habitat that you might have in your backyard that you can monitor.
Mm. Ben, you've talked about some of the existing challenges sage grouse are facing. What sort of additional pressures would a changing environment add to that mix?
There's a couple types of things that are particularly worrisome. One is the arrival of exotic diseases as well as exotic plants into the bird's habitat in Montana. There's a type of grass called cheatgrass that originally comes from Russia that has been invading for a long time in the states to the south of us, particularly Idaho, Nevada, and California. And the thing about cheatgrass is it makes the landscape burn more frequently. It's a grass that dries out early in the season, as the name suggests, and is very flammable. And when you get more frequent wildfires on the landscape, that kills sagebrush, which is the most important food for sage grouse. And we're now starting to see cheatgrass arrive in Montana and start to dominate some of the places like the Bighorn Mountain flanks in the southeast corner of the state, even places in the Bitterroot Valley and some of Beaverhead County, we're seeing more cheatgrass. And so it's a real concern that we might start burning the habitat accidentally that sage grouse needs the most. Also, just general drought conditions are really difficult for sage grouse. 12 of driest years on record in the West have occurred in the last 15, and we know that sage grouse in those years often won't even attempt to breed, or they'll lay fewer eggs will hatch, and fewer chicks will survive. And so you have a long-term productivity decline in the population itself.
Sounds like it's facing a real uphill struggle.
I guess I don't want to be too negative about it. I mean, there are things we can do. First of all, people need to start dumping less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Just last week, my wife and I got solar panels for our rooftop here in Missoula so that our electricity, less of it, will come from coal. But there's also land management things very specifically that can be done in places like sage grouse habitats. We need our agencies to plan for drought rather than be surprised by it. We need to have better regulations put in place for how we produce energy, because there's things we do on the landscape that fragment these habitats and make them more vulnerable to change by drought. There's really a whole range of things that we can engage, and I consider it an opportunity, not something to stay home about.
I don't know who to address this to. I'll just toss it out there. Senator Baucus is co-sponsoring a bill that would make agencies, in short, coordinate better their response to climate change. How effective would a measure like that be, or is it strictly window dressing?
Well, I think it would be very effective. Every bit could help. We need the Bureau of Land Management. We need the Forest Service, who are our federal agencies that manage some of the biggest bird habitats in the western U.S., to really step up and recognize that this is going to be one of their future, if not current, duties, is to begin working in anticipation of climate change and making sure they do everything they can in terms of making good choices for how we'll cope with a hotter, drier planet in the future.
President Obama last week promised a renewed effort to combat climate change. But between, Steve, the IRS and Benghazi, NSA and healthcare, do you think climate change will get lost in the shuffle or not?
Certainly, Ed, is a concern that it might get lost in the shuffle. But I guess the message that Ben and I want to make very clear and emphasize is that this is not something we can put off. We need to support political efforts by Baucus, by Obama, and policy efforts that are really going to confront the climate issue head on. And we need to be a world leader in climate policy. Ben mentioned solar panels, but you know, we need to take individual action, but we also need to take action at the federal level, the state level, the local level. This is not something that's going to go away. We can't turn our backs on this. The science is clear. There's been lots and lots of study, and we know that more carbon in our atmosphere is not the direction we need to be going. We need to find alternative energy sources. We need to conserve energy. We need to do everything possible to make our buildings more energy efficient, to make our cars more energy efficient. We need to support politicians and policy efforts that both Obama and Baucus are bringing forward.
One last question, and that would be take action, but take action at what cost? What is this going to cost industry and government and, in the end, you and me as consumers?
Yeah, I have to say that the cost of not doing anything is much, much higher than the cost of doing something, and there may be some economic costs in the short term. But in the long term, we're going to save a lot of money and a lot of resources if we do the right thing now. And with our economy starting to turn around, I think is a good time to be thinking about the. I mean, we can't just say, well, you know, let's wait and do something next year or next decade. We have to take action now. I mean, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been screaming loudly for the last decade that we're at the 11th hour here, and we really need to take action now. And that means individuals, that means local governments, state governments, national governments, and internationally, all countries need to step up to the plate, and we really need to do everything we can to move away from fossil fuels and go to alternative energies and energy conservation.
And Ben, you're on board with that?
Well, I am, and you know, one of the things we need to keep in mind is we can't always anticipate the future. Sometimes we get surprised by what the costs are or aren't of pursuing a particular energy type. Right now, for example, in the last year, the carbon footprint in the U.S. has been reduced, and that's because of a dramatic drop in the cost of natural gas. Who would have guessed that 5 years ago? So we know what puts carbon in our atmosphere. We know what types of energy don't. Clearly, we have to give those types that put less in the atmosphere a better chance and continue research and study and implement them where we can.
I've been speaking with Sage Grouse consultant Ben Diebel and Steve Hoffman, executive director of Montana Audubon. Fellas, I very much appreciate your all's time. Thanks for sharing your input.